Don't forget to suck some titties.
You know, I like to start this podcast out on a light note. Things have been a little bit too serious lately. So I like to start out with a guy named Brad Sigmon. He recently was executed using the firing squad method for the first time in 15 years. Now, Brad Sigmon, he's this occurred in Columbia, South Carolina. He got, the funny part is he got to choose how he wanted to die, which is kind of ironic how people who are getting the death penalty, because more likely they killed someone, which I'll get into the details in a minute of what he did. It's funny how he didn't want to do the electric chair because it would cook him alive. It's like, wow, nice that you got to be able to choose your death. but yeah, this dude's closing statement, by the way, which is funny how people get closing statements like anyone gives a fuck what they have to say. I want my closing statement to be one of love and a calling to my fellow Christians. There it is. To help us end the death penalty. You know, one thing he wants to leave a mark and make a difference is for, because one thing, no matter what, in certain religions and stuff, no matter what you do, no matter what you did, as long as you can rationalize and as a Christian, you know, all can be forgiven, right? An eye for an eye justification of the death penalty is overtaken by Jesus' New Testament guidance of grace and mercy. Basically, what he's saying there is the eye for an eye of the Old Testament should be in effect because the New Testament says for grace and mercy. Well, that's the reason why there's separation of church and state, my buddy. This is exactly why, which even though it's still involved, but you know, whatever. In case you guys are wondering, what the fuck did this guy do to get three people with rifles to annihilate his ass for his death? On April 27, 2001, he showed up to an ex-girlfriend's parents' house. His plan was to tie the parents up and kidnap his ex for a romantic getaway. I think there's other terms we would parlay that. It's not really romantic if the other person doesn't want to go with you. I think we could just say it's something else. But instead, I guess something happened. He decided to beat the parents up with a baseball bat 9 times each. And of course, they died. And he tried to kidnap her, but she jumped out of the car and he was able to get a bullet in her foot. Now, she survived. It was a long time ago. She survived. And so he didn't get the getaway, but he got some bullets in his chest instead. And he admitted to all this. Like, basically, when rubber met the road and he was being tried, like, yep, I did that shit and I was wrong. Forgiveness and all this stuff. Here's a quote for his rationalization for some of this stuff. I was obsessed with her. Did I love her more than anything else in the world? You know, that's why you just gotta be with someone that doesn't love you. I'm kidding. Because you know what? I don't want a bullet in my foot or my parents be beaten with a baseball bat. Damn, that got dark real quick. But still, you know. See that, and I think honestly, you know, to be serious for a second, this is kind of a symptom of, yeah, this happened in 2001, but still, I think it still parlays in today's kind of our adjustment to intensity in terms of entitlement and stuff like that. Like this guy, you know, people seek that extreme lust and stuff like that. Like, obviously, they weren't together. anyone that for your love, they would tie up your parents and beat them to death with a baseball bat, do they really love you? And that's the thing. It's psychopath, narcissism to the extremest extent. And you can sense one, I know it's a small, his statement of, if I read it again, and this isn't to make this religious, but it's again the mind of psychopaths, of anytime their back's against the wall, they turn to extreme things, extremism, people, a group of people that they know no matter what you do, there is a force to forgive. And forgiveness is one of those things that I think we have become too comfortable being okay with overall in society. You know, to be okay with people murdering someone's parents because their profound love for them, you know, it's not exactly the type of forgiveness is like, hey, I didn't do the dishes last night. I forgive you. You know, that's forgiveness. Hey, I accidentally kicked your cat outside. Now, I don't know, that may be a little bit harder to forgive. There's different levels of forgiveness. Like, hey, I took your car out to run some errands. I know I didn't ask you, but I did kind of, you know, sideswipe someone. And I know you're not insured and I don't have any money to cover it. You may be able to be forgiven there. Those are things, there's levels to increase forgiveness. And a quote that I thought of, I made the shit up, by the way. Not the story, but this quote. The people who cause the most pain and harm to the world and to people are typically the ones that ask for the most forgiveness, right? Like, look, everyone makes mistakes. There's levels to it. But forgiveness overall has become this beaten down, just as no matter what, because of faith, because of, it's the, you know, they say, you know, the easy thing is to hold on to stuff. The hardest part is forgiving. That's what a big person does. It's like, you know, most things, yes. You know, I don't think all things should be forgiven. I'm sorry, if you try to kidnap my daughter and you better successfully kill me. Because there's no amount of pleading and forgiveness and, you know, anything you could do for me to forgive that. There's nothing forgivable about it. But the reason why he felt like he can do it is because there's this extremism aspect that people crave of extreme love no matter what, till the world ends, till death do us part. It's like, you weren't even one. They weren't married. She wanted nothing to do with him at a certain point. They weren't together. They had a strained relationship. But when you get into that, those extremism, toxic situations where someone's going to key your car, where someone's going to, you know, eavesdrop on you at 2 a.m. and they drive past your house, you know, the huge. I think he's a symptom, and this was a grown-ass man when he did this. This wasn't like some 20-year-old of, oh, man, I saw a location on Snapchat. Oh, you know? but overall, I think the overall thing I want to, I think everyone should take out of it is, you know, we do give a lot of, it's funny how, I'm not saying that prisoners shouldn't have rights and stuff like that, because obviously they should. But I think if you kill people and stuff like that, and they do decide to give you the death penalty, it's weird how you get to choose how you die, but the people that you harmed didn't get to choose how they die. The reason why you're there in the first place. Or if you did it really, I'm not saying you should get killed the same way that you kill someone, but I don't think it should be up to you to choose how you decided to get the death penalty. People say it's inhumane. Well, what they did to someone was more inhumane. And I know there's a thing about people being, you know, falsely accused and stuff, but if it's pretty odd, the dude admitted to it. Like, it was obvious. Yeah, he did that. There's plenty of evidence. And you shouldn't get, maybe you shouldn't, they should have to prove beyond a like, if you do something, you go to jail, you're in prison, then over time, if it's like so damning, the evidence where it's 100% confirmed, then that's when the death penalty should be applied. There shouldn't be no, you get some cool ass meal, you shouldn't get no cool ass last statement. Like, most people don't even get last statements, except if they write a will and a eulogy themselves. Which, no one's writing fucking wills these days. No one has time to write a will. Most people can't afford a will. But, you know, it's weird. It's almost like we treat people that do extreme behavior. We reward highly risky, extreme, dangerous behavior more than we do highly beneficial, giving back, you know, just doing good to the world behavior. That's what this signifies to me. It's real when we glorify prison culture. And, you know, there's a lot of, and honestly, you could blame a lot of social media. I think it's cool when people tell their stories about, you know, being in the cartel and all that stuff. Not that it's cool, but, you know, it's good information entertainment-wise. But we also got to be careful when we glorify to make it too funny, or we glorify it to how cool it was and all that stuff. You get these platforms like No Jumper when it comes to gang related stuff, and people that profit off it, which is a whole different thing, that aren't a part of it, but they profit off it for their own benefit type of thing. You get a lot of this cartels type of stuff, and you get a lot of promotion to it, and indirectly it probably promotes it more than it doesn't, if that makes sense. But yeah, that's why I decided to open this on a lighthearted note. Welcome to episode 331 of the Offbeat Podcast with Clint Nelson. I'm your host, Clint Nelson. Don't forget to like, follow, comment, subscribe, hit the fucking notification bell, and don't forget to suck some titties. Yeah, we'll edit all that in. But yeah, you get the jizz. But yeah, recording this on March 9th. Yeah, March 9th. 2025 for the archives. Yeah. Big old things, eh? Yeah, you know, I've been just looking. You know, it's funny. I've been looking for current topics and news. I was the other. You know, I realized before I get into more stuff that I've been kind of digging, I'm trying to get back to more of the old roots of actually, you know, doing some offbeat topics, you know, stuff that's kind of trending, but maybe a little out there. And I realize there's not really much news out there. If that may, like, there's news out there, but nothing that's actually really interesting. If that may, it's all the same shit. It's all about, you know, Trump. It's all about Ukraine. It's all about this. It's all about political stuff that really doesn't matter at the end of the day. But let me tell you what does matter. Succession. before I get into it. So, yeah, look. This is like, I started watching Succession a while ago. So, here's kind of like my Succession show update. I'm like halfway through season 4. But I'm going to be honest with you. So, I think sometimes going into watching something, when everyone says it's like the greatest TV show of the past decade or 20 years, like it's the best HBO show since Sopranos, it's the best this, like it's considered one of the best like dramatic TV shows in the past, you know, recent TV history, right? So this high expectation, I've been hearing about it for a couple years now, never really got into it, but I started watching. I'm like, you know what? This shit's actually pretty good, right? But I'm like, season 4 now, the show's almost over, and I'm going to be honest, I'm already kind of not bored of it, but if I had to be honest about it, and I'm curious if a lot of other people think this, the show feels like it's pretty repetitive, right? It feels like there's nothing really exciting at a certain point. Like, I still enjoy the show, but it's kind of lost that luster over time, even though the show is still good. If that makes sense. And that's kind of a weird feeling. Something is still good. A show, a movie. It's still good. But you just don't really have an interest to keep. Like, there's no urgency to be like, oh, I gotta, you know, finish. I gotta finish the season. It's like, you know, when I want to. It's still a good show. Don't get me wrong. I'm gonna finish it just because I'm already this far into it. But is it the best top five show? It doesn't, I don't know. I have to go through. It's a really good one. Is it one of the best TV shows ever? I wouldn't say it's like top three, top five, but it's definitely, in terms of writing, in terms of story and stuff like that, it's a really, really good show. So, you know, it feels repetitive, but it's still great writing simultaneously, if that makes sense. All right. Just had to get that out there. So, yeah. Let's just get into it for, you know, it's like the weekly log. All right. My week three day trading review. See, guys, I lose money for the content. but not this week. So, as of right now, I had a positive week. Last week, in terms of profit, I made $549, plus $549 in profit, which is a big upgrade from the previous week. Whew, that previous Friday made me want to castrate myself. by the way, I randomly started watching another TV show on top of the previous TV show that I was already watching simultaneously. These British shows are fucking wild, bro. They will just show flat out flanking uncircumcised wieners on TV. Like, I'm gonna, you know, it's just like, nah, dude, I will say, I think, you know, and even looking back, sorry, I know I'm getting sidetracked, but now I even think about it, because I started watching a show called Industry, because it kind of, I'm very obsessed with finance and stock market and trading and stuff like that, and this show kind of aligns with that. So just naturally, I've gravitated to it, and I was, you know, looking back at, like, if you guys ever watch Gordon Ramsay, everyone knows the U.S. version of Kitchen Nightmares, but people, the British version is a whole different, a lot of people say the British version's more real, it's more raw, the U.S. version seems more played up, dramatized, it's not really about the business, it's more about entertainment, where the British version felt like real, like he's actually trying to really help it, you know. He's trying to help both, but it feels different. But I think just the art of British television, like BBC and just kind of British public television, cable television, it's a whole different, obviously it's a whole different vibe. British people are, you know, bland. I'm kidding. Beans and toast. And look at his menu. I guess it really, like, I guess that's all they eat over there is beef Wellington and risotto. Maybe that's why they just brought it over here. But in all seriousness, like, the whole intensity, the rawness, you British people are nasty, sexual fiends. but, you know, it's a very interesting, intense show. It's really good. But it's like, bro, like, damn, like, I get the whole point how this connects to the story, like, and what you're trying to do, but Jesus, like, I don't want to be a guy complaining about watching, you know, tits on my computer screen or circumcised penis that I didn't ask for. Two of them, by the way. Two of them in a two-episode span. That's got to be a record. They wouldn't even show that on TV here. Even like, complete, like, mature TVMA shows, like seeing dudes schlongs on American movies and TVs does not happen often. On British TV, before I could tell, they're just like, yeah, bro, it's part of protocol. if you're not willing to show your wee-wee out of here. But, you know, it's fair game, you know, and I gotta give it to him. You know, we gotta admit, on American movies and television, we definitely try to show more of, we will expose all a woman's body parts, but, you know, for the, you know, the schlong is where typically it's very, like, it's got to be, no pun intended, packaged a certain way, how it's presented, it's got to be in a subtle way, it's got to be only for a certain amount of seconds on screen before it's considered X, Y, Z. There's a lot more restrictions. British TV, there's like, bro, they'll just have in the frame from fucking a half, like a 30-second scene of this, them talking in the kitchen. I'm like, you know, I'm not sitting here staring at it, but at the same time, you guys have the camera pretty low. What else? I'm not looking at the cabinets. You know, I don't care that they're talking about the state of their relationship. Like, I'm looking at the zoo schlong. Like, it kind of makes you quite like, it's like, but you guys don't tell me you're putting this shit on screen for art or to explain or to kind of, you know, foreshadow. Oh, it's shadowing, all right. But don't tell me you're showing these body parts because it advances the plot line. Like, no, you guys just want to keep people intrigued in something. And there's nothing wrong with that. But just don't, if I swear to God, if I look deep into the stories and behind the scenes, like, oh, you know, we wrote all these scenes in because they really show the intensity of, you know, the degeneracy and finance. It's like, all right, that's what we're going to do. Okay. But yeah, no, British TV is crazy. But yeah, anyways, back to day trading. So here's what I actually talk about day trading. So yeah, plus 549 in profit. You know, I wrote down some notes, you know. I think I'm starting to get the hang of it a little bit. The second you start thinking you get the hang of it, that's when you go broke. But you know, I put one thing I think trading, it kind of, you know, I've been watching a lot of different things about, you know, stock brokers and stuff like that. They said the common traits they notice a lot is the reason why a lot of new ones, they lose money or they liquidate their account, whatever you want to call it, is because they're not realistic with themselves. They think they're better than they're at with it. And it's kind of like a boom or bust for a lot of people. It's, I'm going to get rich quick thing. But like any get quick rich thing, as quick as you could get rich is as quick as you cannot be rich. You could lose it all, you know. As thing about anything that you could get some real quick and easy, it's just as fast as you could lose it. But I forgot where I was going with that. But one thing I'll put, and one thing I know, it really, but what they'll explain is, trading will make, will force you to face the worst parts of yourself, and it will force the most unaddressed issues you have with yourself will come out, because, you know, money, like anything, it's a very fragile, it's a high commodity. And depend on, even if you are, sometimes the more money you have, the worse it could be when you lose at it. There's a it brings out the worst. But the good thing it does, if you get past that initial stage of being kind of emotionless, not being too attached to winning and losing money and all that stuff, it will make you have a better relationship with your money in the, you know, in the end, or at least if you approach it the right way. So I've been going down these rabbit holes about this. One thing I realize is I think sometimes, and at least in my experience, I think pressure meeting opportunity doing something like this, it's very important to how serious you will take it. Because if there's no urgency to really attack it or to really go into unfamiliar territory and really be willing to go for it or risk it, then you're always going to be you're always going to be playing afraid to lose. And kind of like comparing it to sports, the more hesitant you are on the field, the more at risk you are getting injured. You can't play football if you're scared to get injured, because you probably will get injured. If you're afraid of rolling your ankle, jumping up to get a rebound. What's probably going to happen, you're going to be stiff. You're going to be very hesitant. You're not going to jump with fluidity and with confidence. And then when you land, you're going to land on your feet a certain way. And since you're actually preventing yourself from getting injured, you're actually going to hurt yourself. And it's kind of like that connection of I'm kind of connecting to this is the more you are afraid of, let's just say, if you are afraid of losing $40, if you're afraid of losing $100, so you're just willing to take $40 losses all the time, you're going to lose $40 a lot of times. And you're going to end up losing more than just taking that $100 loss one time and actually being able to reassess what you need to do. But I, you know, for people deep into the trading, right? This is why I've kind of have compared trading. So trading in terms of option standpoint, it's like dating. 0-day options is literally just nut and get out. I promise. I actually sat down and wrote notes for this shit. This is how you know I'm dialed in. On a good day, you're only holding on for 5 to 10 minutes. That's when you're going to get most bang for your buck. No pun intended. That's what 0-day options are. If you're holding on to it past 10 minutes, you're probably going to lose money on it. It's just the stats, you know? If you're doing 1 to 2 weeks out on options, I like you, but the second is causing too many problems, I'm getting out without notice. That's what 1 to 2 week options are, you know? It's, hey, you know, I really like talking to you. You know, you seem like a nice person, nice guy, a nice gal. But, you know, if I get any profit on return, I'm getting the fuck out of here, you know? if you do 1 to 2 month options, I just want to get to know you. No stakes. And then if you actually want to buy a stock and invest in the long term, then, you know, you have just given up on happiness and enjoyment. and that's marriage. No, I'm kidding. No, but, you know, in all seriousness, it's funny how every profession, anything involving highs and lows. If you really look at it, and I was thinking about this. This is a weird assessment. I was doing something completely random. I was looking at a stock chart. And they always say investing in like the S&P 500, these big index funds are always going to be the most safest, the most quote-unquote guaranteed money in the long term. Because they're going to be protected by the stock market. Even when it goes up and down. If anything is going to be profitable, it's going to be those indexes. Because they're an accumulation of all of the major stocks that actually matter. So you're going to get your best bang. You put money in there. Let it sit in there. Let it grow. You'll make some money. Okay? You'll at least get something out of it. And that's really, you know, when you think about, I was looking like, this is literally like a 30-year, investing financially is like a 30-year marriage. Because you see the ups, the downs, the 2008 crash. Like, if you got married in 2000, right? You know, 9/11. Probably fucked up some shit. You're having those doubts a couple years in that most married people have. That they admit to where they're like, damn, I don't know. This is what I signed up for. Then, you know, 7-8 years. Things are going well, you know. You have a kid or two. Then, you know, the financial crisis. The 07-08. And then, if you really had a housing issue, you probably did get divorced anyways. and then you have those, and it cannot get worse than this. If we get through this, though, we'll be great. You get through this, we'll be fine. Then, you know, you go another 9 to 10 years, things are fine, you know, nothing too serious. And then you have the big shutdown of 2019, 2020, all that good stuff. It's crazy how it's already been 4 years since that. You have that. And that's basically like, shit. You've been you've been married to someone long enough that you're like, yeah, you know, I like you in spurts, but I don't know if I want to be home with you all the time, you know? That, when you talk to married people, this is where I'm getting my accreditation from. But, you know, if you just stick it out, the index fund, then you see the payout, you're like, you know what? At the end of the day, 30 years later, 38% return, you can't beat it. You know, happy wife, happy life. and then she divorces you, take all that index funds anyways. But you know what? That's the beauty of life. But yeah, no, my week 3 review, pretty good. You know, I'm now technically in the positive overall, but I'm a little kind of worried. I'm not worried. I'm pretty hopeful. I got some stuff in place, but you know what? You just got to keep it moving, you know. And today's sponsor, you know, I saw an old sponsor of mine I had. I'm not going to name drop them. I saw their drink, you know, because I know when these podcasts do these, they're subtle sponsorships. They don't label them in links, but they put it, they're sitting interviewing someone, they put it in front of them, in front of their microphone, where it's easy enough for people to see, but it's not, you know, so blatant where they're not advertising it. Product placement, it's a different type of advertisement where they don't pay you, but, you know, you get some benefit out of it. All right, moving on to important things. Shit, I wrote down a lot of different shit. Oh, okay. So, I recently dabbled into something, you know, I dabbled into a dark world. First of all, I didn't know ChatGPT was free. I thought you had to pay for it or some shit. I was bored. I needed a break. I was doing a lot of intensive research on stuff. I'm like, I just need a break. And I was like, I was watching some, and they mentioned something about ChatGPT they were using. And I'm like, you know what? Let me see about it. I type it in. And it's actual. You just go on it and you just start asking questions or whatever. And the bitch literally just talks to you. Not like it's in a text message form. I'm sure they do have a voice form. But I'm sitting there taking a little break, and I'm just asking generic stuff. And I'm like, you know, I'm not going to lie, this shit's pretty, you know, if it didn't say it was automated, there's only a few things that would make me know pretty obviously that it was, you know, artificially automated. But I gotta say, in terms of specificity, if you're getting lost, like, you could have a full-on get-lost conversation with this thing. Because I did. I asked a question about me, about something specific to me, and then it was like, you know, you do understand me. Nah, but, like, I was actually sitting there asking, like, random questions about the stock market and, you know, something about personality stuff and all this stuff. And I'm sitting there and I realize it's been 40 minutes and I'm sitting there texting, I'm typing on my computer back and forth with this thing. And I'm like, and I forgot for like 10 minutes. I was like, oh, this thing's not real, but it feels like I'm talking to like tech support or some shit, you know? It's like, fuck that, you know, fuck paying the therapist. You got any problem, talk to ChatGPT. It will lie and make yourself feel better, you know. It's like, you know, subscribers ain't coming in. Be like, well, ambition is a beautiful thing. And you're like, you know what? You're on to something. I like you. You're a nice gal. But now, you know, some notes I took from it was, it's kind of scary. You know, when you start, you know, doing the stock market thing, you get a lot, you know, you learn a lot about these AI companies and how kind of scary it is, how advanced they are. When you look deep, like, you hear the word artificial intelligence, you kind of are aware of it, but you don't really understand, like, everything involved with it. Stuff like NVIDIA, Palantir, and all this stuff, like, And you start looking like the shit they're having some shit do. Like, and I immediately, when I was just kind of feeling this ChatGPT out, I'm really seeing the extent it will go to. If you've ever seen the movie Her, I've actually talked about it in this show before. Like, I can actually see now how someone could actually get emotionally attached to it if they are completely unhinged human beings. But I can see how if you wanted to escape, pretend you had a partner, or pretend you had a friend and all that stuff, like, you can go to ChatGPT and these fake AI robots and stuff and feel like you're having a full life with them. Like, you could fake a friendship with these things if you were completely just disattached from reality. It is very, very possible. And I think even rational people would be surprised. Like, you could get caught up in a second, you know. But I was looking through and, you know, looking in the video and all this stuff. Like, it is kind of scary how quick this AI stuff, this ChatGPT, how much it is changing. You know, our lack of need to be better at communicating as people. And when it comes to jobs, and like, I think with Amazon, they're already starting some warehouse where automated robots are performing the actual task of like what human beings would do. And look, machinery and, you know, it's stuff like that. It's always going to evolve over time. Like, people used to have to do a lot more than they do now. There's a lot of things that are automated, but we still need people for the middleman type of stuff to get work done. But it might legitimately get to a point where, like, no one at these Amazons, these FedExes, these UPSs, they might not legitimately need the lowest of the low in terms of people doing the distribution, people working at the warehouses. And that's kind of scary. Might not even need delivery drivers. That's scary within itself. And, you know, it's funny. I was in the rationalization of, like, you know, people worry that it's about, no, people worry it's going to take jobs away. It's like, no, it's going to make it to where you don't have to do the jobs that suck. It's like, no, that's not what's going to happen. Is that, you know, these rich people, these quote unquote investors, like, no, it's going to be such a great change. Yeah, no, it's going to make it where you don't have to do the dirty work, the hard work, you know? It can have it where we can have people focus on the more important stuff. And it's like, but if you take those jobs away, there's just going to be less jobs. You're not going to create more jobs to pay people more. That's not what's going to happen. It's just funny. They're going to tell you, it's like, don't be sold. Don't let these politicians, don't let these AI companies tell you that this is actually going to be so you can have a better financial or work opportunity. Because let me tell you, it's not like all those people that are working at those, they're going to promote them to a different position that's more meaningful, that's more fulfilling, that pays more, that's less labor, to reward them for doing the other work. They're gonna be like, hey, we don't need you. That's what they're going to tell you. That's exactly what they're going to tell you. So, you know, I found that pretty. But yeah, I think it is. I'm not necessarily for or against AI personally. But that ChatGPT thing, it really did open my eyes. And that movie Her, I think I would have to look back, but I couldn't remember. I felt like what I said at the time was like, I could see how that could happen for someone who's down bad on their life and stuff like that. Or people that are, you know, just need any form of connection and they would rather deal with that and pay for whatever than to deal with real life repercussions of, you know, having a partner, dating, finding someone and stuff like that. That, you know, that could be scary, it could be daunting, it could be just a lot of work. And you just get a robot or a person that's not really a person, you know? that's going to be probably more appealing to even people that would say right now they would never do something like that. But at the same time, you know, these are the same guys that get sex dolls, you know? one thing that will sell to the end of time is, you know, pocket pussies. I think they are making a Blue Mountain State revival. That's where you get it from, by the way. I would never use such a thing. Too much cleaning. I like the rationale. I was like, well, you know, it would just be too much maintenance. Like, wait, that's why you wouldn't, that's the only thing stopping you? Like, I mean, it's probably a good reason. I don't, like, do you put that thing in the washer machine? Like, yeah, you know, yeah, just put it next to the bowl that I just ate fettuccine out of. It'll be fine. You know, how do you clean that thing? You bleach it? You put some goo goo gone? Because the goo goo will probably not be gone. Or the kaboom. Well, kaboom is why it's nasty in the first place. But you know what? I'll keep it moving. Okay. So, another thing, right? I'll be the first to admit, I watched a good portion of Antonio Brown on Theo Von's podcast. I did not watch a single minute of Antonio Brown. Because honestly, I'm kind of scared to watch it. Not because I think he's going to, like, blow up or destroy it. Like, I honestly, on that big of a stage, you know, all the CT jokes are funny. You know, it's all cool and funny. Like, what he did to get out of the league. All the extraness. His post-retirement, doing these, like, funny little Twitter stuff and all that stuff. Like, he'll be fine and all that stuff. But I think I think he's starting to get played out a little bit. And I don't think anyone's doing it on purpose to expose him. But I think when you're putting him on these bigger and bigger platforms and stuff like that, where he's just talking unedited, unfiltered and stuff. From the stuff I've seen, like, in most of the show I watch with Theo, it really kind of feels like, you know, I don't really find this entertaining personally, you know, in terms of it doesn't feel like he's got much more to say than what he has to say. Like, I don't really feel like he has new spins on anything or any. It kind of feels like we're watching someone in real time. He's kind of Kanye-ing it. And really, no, I'm not saying he's Kanye in terms of saying the weirdest of weird shit. But, you know, it really is like Cat Williams said. It's like, you know, the problem I have is, like, people are getting mad at stuff Kanye says. He said, the issue I have is, why do we keep taking someone serious who obviously has a lot of issues? A lot of mental health issues. Why are we putting them on full blast and to tear them down and all this stuff? Like, we should not be and I'm not against, like, anyone should say what they want to say, but it is kind of, it does get uncomfortable where it feels like he's being used more to be the butt of the joke now. And he's not a victim by any means, but it's really just kind of like the optics of everything. It's like, it's really uncomfortable to watch because it's not even like the funny entertainment. It's like, it's got really like, it really sounds like he just is not there, if that makes sense. Honestly, it feels like he's coping. It seems like he's coping more with the fact that he's not a football player anymore. He kind of self-destructive, and the way to rationalize it is be over the top to be entertaining. And I don't know how, you know, you can't get mad at anything crazy he says, because I think he has a lot of probably issues. Same with people say about Kanye. Dude has obviously a lot of issues that I don't understand, like, why everyone's obsessed with taking him serious all the time. Like, who cares if he says some shit about, you know, Holocaust and stuff like, why are you taking him serious? Like, I would not give anything he says about that stuff the time of day. Like, if you can't take someone serious, why do you take him serious? And with Antonio Brown at this point, it really is kind of like this. I'm not mad at anything he says or anything like that, but I just don't, it feels more like a, I think the notes I wrote down, it's uncomfortable to watch. It honestly feels like he's being taken advantage of, not by the shows or anything like that, but the fact that people want to hear what he has to say, but he's being forced to be out there, probably by promotional teams and stuff like that, to push something. And I feel like doing this, it's actually going to make taking him less serious. And that's the only thing I kind of worry about. But yeah. So also, I came across this other article. It's a USA Today article. The headline was, teens don't learn this in sex ed. Now, you're probably like, oh, teens don't learn this in sex ed. It's time to start telling them. Now, you're probably wondering, why do you care about anything about teen sex ed? I don't. But I was on a website looking up news and stuff like that. I came across, and I found it's kind of like a health opinion thing. Here's what I took from the article, right? The article, I broke down to each small little paragraph. It's basically sex ed teaches how to avoid pregnancy. I think is one easy way to avoid pregnancy overall, but we'll get there. Experts say to learn the time in a month when pregnancy is most likely. I get it. You know, it is important, especially as females and stuff like that, to know when you're the most fertile, your period times, like all that stuff is very important. I'm not going to discourage that or nothing. Setting the stage for understanding how to set up for circumstances you want. Basically, kind of like understanding how to set up your life. Like understanding that the older you get, the harder it's going to be to conceive. Setting your timeline of when it's right to have children for you. Planning it correctly. All that stuff. All that stuff's great. You know what my conclusion is? If you don't want to get pregnant, if no one jizzes in you and you stay abstinent, none of this matters. That's really all it is. And I think sometimes, and I know that's kind of being crass. I think sometimes though, like, yes, teaching teens and stuff how their body works and young people, it's very important to know. But overall, one danger you got to be careful of is when you start teaching, well, you got to know the timing you're the most fertile, protected sex and all that stuff and all that. All what you're kind of doing is being like, well, there are times where you won't get pregnant as likely. So roll the dice. And that's something you got to be careful about. You know, they should know that. But at the end of the day, if you don't want to get pregnant, there's really only one way not to. Yeah, there's, you know, protection and all that good stuff. Plan B, but everything has a price to pay. You're either sacrificing pleasure or babies. You know, if you take any anti-pregnancy pills or whatever you call them, if you take when you're on contraception, when you're taking drugs so you don't, it fucks with your hormones and stuff too. But the thing is, like, people try to get too cute with this stuff. You should only really practice basically anytime you do this stuff, you should expect that you're gonna have a baby. You know, that's the moral of the story. Now, you need to know your body in terms of, like, as a guy and girl, you need to know how the stuff works overall. When, like, all that stuff is important to know, but the problem you get into is you teach that at a young enough age, people are always going to feel like, hey, you know, if we just time things the right way, we'll be fine. And those are the ones that are, you know, four children deep and have nowhere to live. When really the story should be, yeah, all these semantics and stuff, it's the same as finance. You know, planning your pregnancy is like planning your finances. You know, you can move your money in this account. You can move into an offshore. You can change banks. You can put in a Roth IRA, have a dividend yield. You can have a savings where it grows 4%. And so, you know, you don't have all your eggs in one basket. But if you just don't spend money, you save money. If you just keep it in your pants, there's nothing to worry about. Now, look, obviously that's not realistic. But one thing I do, like, the problem is with these type of articles is there's going to be younger people that go across those articles of USA Today and be like, oh, they're going to get the impression that, oh, I just have to, you know, time things up a certain way and I'll be fine. And no, that's not, you could time things up all you want. You can get pregnant on your period. It's not impossible. You need to always assume anytime you go battleship deep in the trenches, it could happen. All right. And because what stuff like this does, in all seriousness, it takes away accountability on everyone involved. The guy involved too, like, oh, well, on your calendar, you say you weren't fertile. It's like, it doesn't mean I can't have a baby. It means it's less likely. And what it does is like, oh, you lied to me about, like, know this. And like, no, like, you just need to go with the assumption. Anytime you go in, something else might come out 9 months later. And you got to take accountability for it. That's all I'm saying. Don't let these articles try to take away accountability from you. And that's what I'll teach my kids is, hey, I don't care what that conception calendar she has on her phone. Because everyone has it these days. Like every there's like 13-year-olds that have that stuff. You know, the time they're picked. Like I don't care what they got on that app. You or strap it up, my boy. But, you know, in more serious news, speaking of Red Target, so Target's having a boycott. apparently, there's a Target boycott going on, not just with Target, but apparently a few other companies under the umbrella of Target. There's a boycott for 40 days because of them ending their DEI initiatives, which is basically diversity, exclusivity, inclusion. I think that's what it is. Yeah. Basically, it has to do with hiring for diversity and all that good stuff, right? Which, look, it's not a bad thing, you know? I don't have an issue. I've never really had an issue with that type of stuff. Do I think it's like, do I really think it's changing anything? Not really. Because if a company doesn't want to hire people, they're going to find roundabout ways to not hire people. And they're going to find roundabout ways to hire people, even if they don't fit the qualifications. That's just the world we live in. But my thing is, for one, when you boycott something, why do you put a timeline on it? There's a ringleader for this, and I get what you're trying to do, but I think the way you're going about it is weird. When you put a timeline on a boycott, you are basically saying, we're not sure how long we could go without your business and product, so we're going to give you 40 days to put them back in place. What if they don't put it back in 40 days? What if nothing changes in 40 days? The way you're going to add like Trump a tariffs, you're going to just add another 30-day extension. It's like when you boycott something, you boycott until what you're striving for actually changes. And you accept, like, I will never come back here unless something changes. That's what a real boycott is. When you put, like, why 40 days of, hey, anyone, don't go to Target for 40 days. It's like, what does this solve? I don't know, but you need to not go to Target for 40 days. I don't really get the goal of that. Me personally, I don't get the whole timeline thing. To me, it defeats the purpose. It's just, especially like, honestly, like Target is like the lowest of any type of supermarket, warehouse place I would ever go to. I don't really like Target. I think they're overpriced anyways, so this does not really affect me. Who grocery shops at Target? No one. No one is going out of the way to get clothes at Target. Like, Target is like, if you don't want to drive an extra 20 minutes to Walmart, if you don't really need to go grocery shopping, you just need to pick up a few, you know, canned stuff, yeah, go to Target. If you need some pads, really, Target is just for, you know, tampons and makeup, for really being honest about it. It's really about, you know, no one's going there to, you know, go deep in the weeds going $300 shopping. Like, I would go to, like, Walmart, Kroger, Costco. Like, there's like five or six different similar ass places I would go to. Target is literally probably like the last on the list anyways. To me, yeah, the number one way to make a point is to stop giving it the time of day and just take your business somewhere else, because that's what they're going to react to. Money. Like, all this stuff, it's great. But if you really, it's just to stop going there. And the more you say you're not going to go there, it makes them kind of feel like, yeah, you're going to come here. Because you give a shit, you know, if you come here or not. And to me, you know, I get the whole goal of it. Because you know what? I'm going to be shorting it anyway. So I'm going to make money off of it. You know, it's a free market. that's how fucked up, you know. I will say, now to go back to stock market stuff, but it is weird. Like, I will say, when you trade in the stock market and stuff like that, it really, like, kind of desensitizes you to businesses. Like, I don't give a single fuck about Target or Walmart. Haven't for a long time. But if you've made me some money, hey, you know, you got a friend in me. No, but you really do, like, look at it different. You really kind of look at a lot of these businesses different. Like, oh, they don't give a fuck about this other shit. The stores are just advertisements for the market, you know? But yeah. So, another thing I've been coming across. You know, I know there's a lot of niche type of stuff when it comes to YouTubers, when it comes to traders or stuff like that, stock market, because this is what comes across my algorithm now. So, I'm going to be honest with you. Advertising and marketing instinctually turns me off. I hate being pushed to buy some. I don't like being sold something. Artificial marketing that doesn't come off as natural, really, I just don't like it. It just, me personally, I understand it works. It has worked on me in the past. But when I feel like you're a salesman, I'm just, eh. But one thing recently, especially with trading, right? You know what they will tell you? It would be these people that have traded for 5 years. They'll make these videos telling you should quit now. Don't do it. You're not going to be successful. You will fail. And you'll never, it's like, well, if you have that type of energy, of course you're not going to succeed. Of course you're not. Sure. But you know what? Honestly, I get it. Because you know what? If you watch a video that tells you to quit something and you actually quit, then you know what? Then it probably wasn't something for you anyways. If you're not willing to persevere, be resilient. But to me, and it's always, they always come off, the ones that are like that, it is not the ones that are actually really successful, really. And it's the ones that did it for 4 or 5 years, did stupid shit. They finally became profitable, and then they tell you not to because I think they're afraid that any newcomers come in to have success, it makes them look stupid. Because they relied on the same shit that everyone taught them. They bought courses and they failed at it, wasted money. Used technical analysis as an excuse to not actually make their own assessments of stuff. And now they go on a side tangent here, but I believe the extreme versions of technical analysis that everyone uses, that I've noticed when I watch a lot of these videos, they all pushes technical analysis and all this stuff. And for some, they do certain types that work. The same ones that follow, oh, this, that, and the other, these candlesticks. You know what? They seem to be the ones that say, yeah, I did this for 3 years, didn't make any money, and then it just started clicking. It's like, if you did the same thing for 3 years, doing the same patterns that everyone else taught you that wasn't making money in it before, you ever thought about maybe making your own type of assessments of what may or may not work? I think people are afraid to look at something, even if they're unfamiliar with it, and actually trying to create their own analysis of how the stuff may or may not actually work. You know? But when I came across these YouTubers and videos, to me, they always came off as self-righteous and you're gonna fail and all this stuff. To me, they come off as people who don't want any competition. They don't want to see anyone succeed in something so they could keep it for themselves, type of thing. It's kind of like you're being told to quit by someone who does trading, who is afraid of competition or becoming more successful than the way they did it. And they're giving a negative sentiment about something. But if you buy my course or sign up for this app, then you'll be successful. And it's always don't do it, don't do it. But if you buy my course, if you buy this app, if you buy this, you sign up for this code. It's like your code or your course is not going to be why I'm successful. I hate to break it to you, you know. These online courses, I think, I'm not saying they can't be beneficial for certain things. But I think for something like this, there's too much free information out there. And, you know, it's like someone, if you actually make real money off of these courses, if you actually make real money off of trading itself, these courses, you wouldn't charge an arm and a leg to prove your worth. And a lot of them fake their results a lot. And to me, what it should show you when you are going across YouTube or anything, Instagram and stuff like that, and someone is telling you stop and quit X, Y, Z of what you're trying to do, and they're trying to sell you something else, that's kind of a telltale sign. They don't know what the fuck they're talking about. Now, because at the end of the day, I will never tell someone to quit something. I will just never. I think that's stupid. Because you just never know. Sometimes in a minute, shit can click. Sometimes it takes time. But people telling someone to quit because they failed at doing something is one of the saddest things to ever tell someone to do. If anything, what your goal should be is to actually show people what you wish, if you actually did learn how to become successful at it, is to, if you really feel like you provide that valuable information, is to actually tell them what you wish you would have learned early on that would have helped you tremendously instead of wasting time doing X, Y, and Z. And it's funny, they always tell you to quit day trading or to quit doing, quit making art, quit, you know, writing, quit making music and stuff like that. I came across this other dude. This dude, he's been making music for 10 years, right? He went to art school, got a degree, got a musical degree and all that stuff. He made music for 10 years and he made a little bit of money here and there, but the last few years it's dried up. And he said, I am done with music. And he said, you shouldn't get into music and all this stuff. Like, it's like, because it didn't work out for him. And I understand what he's trying to say. It's like, it's hard to make money in music. But at the same time, for I could tell, all he did really was make like instrumentals and stuff. But, you know, there's a point that like he made money here. He said it's not sustainable and all that stuff. And I get it. But at the same time, his motivation was, oh, I'm just, you know, tired of being broke. I just want to make money. It's like, well, that's fine. If that's what you want to do, fine. But don't tell someone else like, oh, because you just need to focus on making money and all that stuff. It's like, but what if someone does music and after a couple years, they start making a great living? That's the thing. Like, this life is so unpredictable and unknown. And when you have negative ass people, because they failed at something at first, trying to discourage people from doing something, I understand you're trying to make people aware of potential hazards and stuff, but at the same time, you can only stop people at a certain, like, you gotta let people fail themselves. And I hate, you know, and one of my number one things is coming across these videos saying X, Y, and Z ruined my life. I came across this dude was crying his eyes out, right? And I felt bad for him. This man, he was 25. He lived at home with his mom. You know, he lived in California, and yeah, he was making like 15 an hour at his job, and he day trading. The man made like 28,000 trading, and then he would blow it all in 2 days. Like, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to sit here and cry about when you literally spent your whole portfolio in 2 days of that size when you didn't have to. And I understand addiction and stuff like that, but like, you trying to get sympathy over stupid shit, I'm sorry, I'm not giving it to you. That's the definition of a you problem. But you know, that stuff just bothers me. Because negativity, that it always is the first, like, if something didn't work for me, I'm going to tell you to quit projecting. Like, I understand. I feel bad for people that make those drastic decisions. But you got to understand the territory that comes with what you get into. Like, if you're going to get into a highly risky, you know, job or side hustle, whatever you want to call it, you got to take the good with the bad. It comes with the territory. You can't want the big historic GameStop return, but then get mad when you get a GameStop type of loss. Should have had a stop loss. And the more and more I've done it, the more I look at these people, these people, the more I feel less and less bad for these people. Because they will win crazy amount of money and then just think that it's going to work again. And just, oh, put it all in. It's like, not like, hey, I just won this much. I have $80 in my account. How about I put $20,000 of this $40,000 I won into my account and then keep $20,000 in there? And if I lose $20,000, then you know what? I deserve to lose $20,000. But at least secure yourself in some way. That's the crazy part to me. But you get these people, when you get into these, like, these unstable jobs where, or these unstable career paths where it's like music, it's trading, or it's, you know, YouTube podcasts and whatever it is, where it's kind of a boom or bust, where it's like you typically have to do it for no money for a while before you get good at it and actually make money at it. That's typically for these roles that no one needs to be filled. No one is asking you to do music. No one's asking you to do YouTube. No one's asking you to do podcasts. No one's asking you to trade. No one's asking you to do anything in these type of professions. You can't want the glory of the great payout if you're not willing to take that you might not make money from it, at least for a while. And I just hate seeing this negativity online. And you, the negativity typically doesn't come from the people that made a lot of money. It comes from the ones that made their first 7K last month after 4 years of trying and trying. And they're like, hey, you know what? I'm the best fucking at. You know what? You should just fucking quit. It's like, bro, you liquidated your account 3 times. Shut the fuck up. Yeah, I'm talking all this shit. I better hope it hits this week. Hey, Elon, keep doing stupid shit, please. I gotta put, please do some stupid Monday. I am begging you. Make the market tank. Make me some money. God, Elon, I will buy. You know what, Elon? I'll make you a deal over here. If you tank Tesla, where I can make a 2,000% return, when I can afford a Tesla, I will get a Tesla. You could put me on the wait list. I will get one. All right. Here's your free promo, Elon. Not that, you know, you're the leader of the Treasury or Doge or Tesla or anything. You need promo from me, you know? But yeah. I don't know if I'm going to make this a part two or, you know, just kind of go from there. But if it is, that was episode 331. Of the Offbeat Podcast with Clint Nelson. I'm your host, Clint Nelson. The live follow, comment, subscribe, hit the notification bell. Most important, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget to suck some titties. Yeah, whether this will be a part, whether this will just be the first half or the whole episode, we'll see. But have a great day, morning, night, evening. And oh my God, this fart is unreal.